It has been exactly 1 year since James Craig came back home to Detroit to become the city's 42nd police chief. He was hired by Detroit's emergency manager, Kevin Orr. Chief Craig returned to a city facing bankruptcy with soaring crime rates, police precincts that weren't open to citizens after 4 p.m., and uniform officers demoralized by being spread too thin and forced to work 12-hour shifts. 12 months later, police response times have improved, crime is down, and officer morale is up. We're joined now by Detroit Police Chief James Craig. Welcome.
Oh, I appreciate it. And again, thanks for the opportunity.
You began your police career in Detroit's 10th Precinct in 1977, and then because of layoffs, you headed to Los Angeles in 1981 to continue your career. Well, I'm wondering, as you came back to your hometown a year ago, what did you see as the most striking changes in the city and in its neighborhoods?
Very different. Certainly, I've oftentimes talked about this whole culture of violence, something that was very different than what I saw when I left 33 years ago. And then having moved on to L.A., another city that certainly has had its share of violence. But the culture of violence here was something like I had not seen. I mean, certainly violence directed at seniors was significant, children. It was just a very different culture. And then certainly the blight really was demoralizing. And it was just the city was not the city I left. Certainly the police department was not the police department I left when I arrived.
Tell us about that.
Well, you know, Detroit Police Department in the 70s really was considered one of the premier law enforcement agencies in the country. When you look at community policing, Detroit was in the forefront. There were things that I learned in my short time here that I was able to import to Los Angeles very successfully. And so, you know, Detroit was viewed as that progressive agency. The fact that Detroit was already ahead of the curve in terms of hiring female officers, you didn't see that in a lot of other major city police departments, not to the degree that you see in Detroit. And so I learned a lot, respected department. And again, I came back and some of the things that you pointed out, response time, morale, precincts closed, soaring crime, a department that the community had lost total confidence in. These are the kind of things I was confronted with walking in the door. And so I had a good life in Cincinnati as police chief and as police chief in Portland, Maine. But I was excited about returning home because I really believe that we could make that turn. And we have. I'm excited about what we're seeing today.
And tell us that. So a year later, what do the numbers tell you and what do they tell us? Why don't we start with crime rate? What was your crime reduction goal for this year and where are you today?
Well, overall crime, which is called Part One crime, we're talking about property and violent crime. We set a goal for 2014 of 10% overall reduction. Year to date, we are sitting roughly at 20%. So we're 10% better than what we hoped for. And now we're in the part of the year, the second quarter, that's usually the toughest. But other specific statistics like homicide, we're down 13%. We're certainly in robbery, which is the steepest reduction, a 39% reduction in robbery. And then the subcategory of robbery, carjackings, we're down 29%. I mean, that's phenomenal. Non-fatal shootings, those shootings that don't result in homicide, mm-hmm. we're down 14%. And so when you look at that, and we had some of the lowest months in terms of homicides this year, that was statistically recorded compared to when we started in 2001. For example, we had the lowest month was March that had 10 homicides. So when I look at our numbers, the fact that when I got here in July when, you know, crime was kind of peaking, I set a very soft goal of 5% reduction because I knew coming in and we had already lost 6 months of the year. But we ended up ending the year with an overall Part One crime reduction of 10%. So the morale started to go up because, you know, the officers were forced into these 12-hour shifts. 10% of their pay was taken. And so those changes were made very quickly as it relates to work schedules. Certainly the pay is still an issue, and I'm certainly sensitive to that, given that Detroit police officers, some of the best in the country, also work in some of the most challenging environment in the country. There's no other city like Detroit.
What do you credit when you take a look at this improvement? And granted, I'm quite sure it's not where you want it to be, but you can point to improvements. What do you think was behind that, Chief?
Well, a couple of things. You know, first of all, you know, I've said publicly and believe that cops count. When I make the statement that cops count, I'm talking about the line officer, you know, the person that, you know, at 2 o'clock in the morning when you call the police, they show up. They are the face of this police department. And I felt that they didn't have leadership. They weren't supported. In fact, when I first arrived here, you know, as I do now, I continue to have conversations with line officers. And the one thing that I heard, the chief complaint or concern is they wanted to be cops again. Of course they want their money. They wanted the 10% back. But what I kept hearing, they wanted to be cops. And so when you look at what we're doing today, you know, we're embracing police officers. We want them to do police work. They're doing that. We've had 7 large-scale operations, you know, one a month. They've had an effect on driving down crime. They certainly have had effect on those who want to commit crimes that, you know, maybe I ought to think twice. I mean, when you look at the fireworks this past week, I've talked to a few veterans who, one in particular, Sergeant Munson, who works our mounted unit. He said, Chief, I've worked 35 fireworks. He said, but this one was the best managed, incident-free, and that's what I continue to hear, is that this fireworks, a family affair, that people should come out and enjoy without fear, being feared of being attacked or other crimes being committed. This was an event-free family event, and that's the story that needs to be told.
What about response time? Tell what was it? We were hearing figures of 58 minutes when you came here.
59, 58. And here's the other thing that wasn't widely reported.
Uh-huh.
Because when I came in the door a year ago, it was not uncommon that 40 to 60 calls in one district being held, calls being held between shifts. So the translation of that is many of these calls went unanswered. Calls were just not being answered. And then Detroiters, who I had conversations with, constantly said, you know, why call the police? They're not going to come. And so here we are today, a year later. We set a goal of a 5-minute response time to emergency call for service, what we call priority one calls. Mm-hmm. And while we haven't achieved 5 minutes, we have achieved 10 minutes. So right now we're sitting on a 10-minute average to priority one calls. And that's great news. It's great news because when you look at the national average of police departments handling emergency calls for service is roughly 11 minutes. So we've exceeded the national average, but we're still pushing, and we're doing it with fewer officers than we had a year ago.
And I've got to imagine that is a priority to get the ranks beefed up again.
It's a priority. We have classes in academy. We're still restructuring the department. We're redoing our narcotics unit. We have 70 officers in that unit. We're leaning that unit out, creating a major violator section that will focus on major violator narcotic dealers. Street enforcement drug dealing will be handled by the precincts. The idea is to put additional officers back into the what I'm calling neighborhood police stations, the neighborhood precincts.
And what are you hearing from people, from the residents, as far as what the community perception is of the DPD? Is it evolving?
Wow. Let me just say, I just left a coffee shop. This is just an example of what my day is like when I'm out in the community. The folks in the coffee shop are walking up to me. Thank you, Chief. We see a difference. We feel safer. And this is a constant conversation I'm having with people who live, work, play in Detroit, but not just the residents of Detroit. I'm hearing from our neighbors over in Windsor, Canada. I'm hearing from our neighbors in adjacent suburbs that are saying we appreciate what we see going on in the city of Detroit, because everyone agrees that Detroit must work. Detroit must be safe, because in order for us to realize economic vitality, the city must be safe. This is not something that I read about. This is something I saw in the city of Cincinnati. Cincinnati became a safe city, but it also began to revitalize, especially in the Civic Center area.
Welcome back to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty, talking with Detroit Police Chief James Craig. It's been exactly 1 year since Craig was hired by emergency manager Kevin Orr. Let's talk about perceptions, whether it's nationally or internationally. When the subject of Detroit comes up, you can bet so does the issue of crime and violence. And I'm wondering, in your mind, can Detroit ever truly shake that stigma of being a violent and a dangerous city, no matter what you and your officers do?
I believe so. In fact, we're doing it now. You know, the one thing that we do, I think we do very well, is we work with our partners in the media, and I do view the media as our partner. We need to drive the message. We need to tell the story. We need to talk about our crime reduction efforts. We need to talk about communities' perception. Those things are important. And as we continue to push that out, people will hear the story. And, you know, when people come up to me and say, I love the job you're doing, I love what I see in the DPD, well, the only way they can see it is because they see it on the news. And we're talking about cases. One thing, a statistic that we didn't bring up is, you know, when I got here, it was like an 11% clearance rate to homicide. Mm-hmm. Now we're sitting roughly high 80s, 90% clearance to homicide. The cases are being closed much sooner. And so that certainly goes a long way in building that sense of we respect, we appreciate what the Detroit Police Department's doing, and we appreciate it so much is that when a crime is committed, contrary to what's put out in the media in the past, that people in Detroit don't talk to the police, they don't share information about crimes, they are doing it. And they're only doing it because the confidence of this police department is returning. And that's so important.
You refer to the media as your partners in the media, but I am wondering, you know, you've been in the spotlight now for a year in the Detroit media and Michigan's media. I'm wondering what is, as you watch the way Detroit is covered, particularly crime, is there something you would change in the way it's covered? Does it impact the job you and your officers are trying to do for better or for worse? Can you talk a little more about that?
Well, the Detroit media is very different, certainly. And this is no secret to anyone in Detroit. Very different than in other markets. I've had a good opportunity to work in now three different markets. And so there's this whole business of sensationalism, you know, ratings, and it's the violence that really gets the attention. And it shouldn't be just about the violence. You know, we had a neighborhood police officer summit this weekend where members from the community, our new initiative, the Neighborhood Police Officers Together, we had workshops. We talked about partnering. We talked about the importance of partnering in solving crimes, addressing quality of life issues. One station came out and covered it.
That was it.
One station. But the other thing, when there's something bad, like one of the local stations ran a story about me disbanding the narcotics section. Well, that was not true. Instead of trying to find out and talking to this police chief or someone on the executive team is what we were doing, they ran the story that the narcotics unit was being shut down. So what message does that send to the criminals? What message does it send to the good Detroiters who expect us to enforce the law? It's not a good one. And so they finally corrected it. But by that time, it was a very short story.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of thing that I find frustrating. But I also understand that before I arrived here, the police department didn't even talk to the media.
That's true.
So they had to get their information from other places. And so part of that culture is not what it once was. I mean, I had a great meeting with some of the news directors about 2 weeks ago. And we do it because, again, I want to make sure that relationship is one that's positive. that they can feel like we can have a conversation, because it's twofold for me. I mean, certainly they need to get the information out, but I want to get it out as well. And part of getting that information out allows us to reassure the community that we're out doing the work, that the city is not as unsafe as some may portray it. It doesn't mean that we've solved all the ills of the city. Of course, that's a work in progress. But we need to tell, we need to showcase the great stories.
Chief, you made national headlines earlier this year when you spoke out in favor of law-abiding citizens having guns and supporting Michigan's open carry law. And you were on the cover of the NRA's magazine. Can you talk a little bit about why you believe that gun ownership can be a good thing? Because it's kind of unusual for a big city police chief to be so open like this.
Yeah, very rare. In fact, there are reports that have said I'm probably one of the few. And I always start out, you have to understand the context of the comment. You have to understand the city of Detroit. We'll go back a year when the police weren't always responding to emergency calls for service. Michigan became a shall issue state in 2006. So Detroiters were feeling as if, who can I count on? I have to protect myself. I have to protect my family. They took advantage of the opportunity to obtain concealed carry permits. They did that. And when confronted with a violent situation, an imminent threat to their life or the life of someone else, they responded. And what I said and what I will continue to say is that everyone has a right, an absolute right, to protect themselves from an imminent threat to their life, whether it's their life or the life of someone else. They have an absolute right to protect themselves from great bodily injury or a sexual assault. This is not a law that James Craig wrote. But my point is, I believe in that. I support that. And I'm not suggesting, and I certainly don't support vigilanteism. You know, I've made some very strong comments of what my view of vigilanteism is and my response to it. And I also said that certainly not everyone should be a concealed permit carry holder. Certainly we look at folks that are, one, law-abiding, someone who's responsible, who's trained. And certainly when we have to consider the issue of someone who is suffering from mental illness. Right. I mean, we look across America and we look at the number of mass shooting incidents involving individuals suffering from mental illness. The big question, and my colleagues in other parts of the country, we don't have a good answer for it, but how do we keep guns out of the hands of the mentally ill? That's one. The second piece is, let's change our conversation from law-abiding citizens legally possessing a firearm to the criminals who illegally possess firearms. That's the conversation as I see it, because those are the individuals. If you want to put gun control and say no one can carry a gun, I guarantee you that the criminals will continue to get guns. They're getting guns. In fact, in places like New York and Los Angeles, and while crime is down in both of those specific places, the criminals are still in possession of guns and crimes are still being committed. And so I also talked exclusively about research that was conducted, not my research. But it's a known fact that violent felons, through some research that was DOJ funded, the researchers went out and interviewed a number of felons, ex-felons, or folks incarcerated, and they said they fear the armed citizen more than they fear a police officer. And I also said that in many ways, when you talk about a law-abiding citizen who's armed, it can also act as a deterrent to violent crime. I'm not saying it's the only factor, but a factor.
Chief Craig, we invited Michigan Radio listeners to submit questions they'd like for me to ask you. So I'm going to give you a few of these. They were interesting and very thoughtful. Deborah Hurren had wondered, what are your thoughts on the city's pension situation? Of course, you did refer to the 10% pay cut that officers had to take, but especially looking ahead to what may happen when people retire, we know cuts to pensions and retiree benefits are inevitable with the bankruptcy. And we wondered, not only how are your current officers reacting to that, but how much is all of this a deterrent to you attracting good candidates to the DPD?
It's a challenge. I'm one who always looks at the glass as half full, not half empty. Is it a challenge? Yes. Is it a challenge in terms of retention of good police officers? I mean, I just lost over the last several weeks several police officers to suburban departments who pay more, a better benefits package. And so, yes, that's a challenge. But, you know, I'm concerned. But as I've oftentimes said, you know, when I look at the work that Kevin Orr is doing, and certainly he's done a phenomenal a job in restructuring. It hasn't been an easy one. I can tell you, someone who has worked very close with, he cares about public safety in the city of Detroit. But I also remind folks that Kevin Orr didn't bring this financial crisis to the city of Detroit. I think many can weigh in and say how it got here. But there has certainly been an underinvestment in this police department. And so it's good news that there's been an investment as of late. You know, we got 100 new police vehicles that we have deployed in the neighborhoods throughout the city. But we also have police vehicles that are dilapidated. I call it the police officer's office. Certainly when you look at that and the fact that they lost pay, where's the investment in our police officers? What did the – and I'm going to go back a couple of administrations.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly I applaud the great work that Mayor Duggan is doing, and certainly he's an out-the-box thinker, a risk-taker. And we talk often about initiatives that we can get to really turn the city around. But when you look at prior administrations, and I'll go back before Bing, you know, people that were more concerned about greed, arrogance – you know, power. And what did it get us? It certainly wasn't an investment in this police agency. I'll tell you that. And the police officers feel that. And then you had a situation in this police department where there was an absence, a total absence of leadership. And I know that infuriates some of my predecessors
mm-hmm.
when I say that, but I can't make it up. I mean, I've had conversations with the police officers. I've seen the absence of accountability. And now that those things are in place, we are seeing the change today. A lack of investment in this police department is the reason why we have had to fight so hard over this past year in turning the tide.
Another question from listener Patty Farmer. She was wondering, have you noticed an increase in crime in downtown Detroit since Belle Isle became a state park?
I have not. Again, I remind folks that while there's been a I don't want to say zero tolerance, but certainly enforcement of law violations. In response to the state taking over Belle Isle, I launched a parks unit that would address the other parks like Chandler, Rouge. And certainly there might be a mindset of some who feel like they can't violate the law in Belle Isle. They may want to go to another park. We're very attentive to that. We're taking a like posture as it relates to the other parks. These parks are designed for families where people can enjoy. This should not be a haven for criminal activity.
Wendy Wilbur, listener Wendy Wilbur, wondered, what part of your job causes you the biggest heartbreak?
Wow. Well, one of it, I have to go back to the officers. Certainly, I would tell you one of the things that, you know, I've had the misfortune in the years I've been here, I've attended 6 to 7 police funerals. Some of them were duty-related deaths. That's always a difficult time for a police chief and a difficult time for the organization that you bury one of your own. So that's a challenge. And then the fact that many of our employees, something I've seen here that I haven't seen in other departments, is some of our police officers that are suffering from PTSD. I've been in other agencies where officers that are deployed in the military for a certain time and then they return. And when they return, they're suffering from PTSD. So there's a reintegration effort that's made, some treatment that's provided. But the uniqueness of here in Detroit, our officers are suffering from PTSD because of what they're dealing with in the city. You know, many of our officers have lost partners to violence, family members to violence. Certainly they see their fair share of violence. And so those things have an effect on our officers.
And finally, Chief, looking ahead, you were brought in by Emergency Manager Kevin Orr. You report to him. What do you hope will happen when Kevin Orr's time here is up?
Well, I'm optimistic. Certainly the mayor and I have a great relationship. We're talking about different initiatives. You know, as I've oftentimes said, you know, if the community is dissatisfied with the work that we're doing today and I'm not delivering, then I shouldn't be here. And so I'm optimistic because the people, the rank and file, the elected all seem to be confident and satisfied with the work that's being done today. And so I'm hopeful to have a substantial tenure as police chief. You know, I'll tell you, when you look at being the 42nd police chief in a 150-year-old department, it just tells you that there's been a lack of stability at the top. And that contributed a lot. Now, I didn't talk a lot about that, but you can't have police chiefs come in and out of a police department. It just doesn't work real well. In comparison to Cincinnati, a 210-year-old police department, I was only the 13th police chief. When you look at it from through that lens, it just makes sense that stability is important. And certainly that doesn't mean that a police chief in a major city should stay for life. That's not realistic. I mean, there needs to be change. And we've seen the necessity across the nation where, you know, 3 to 5 years is kind of the average shelf life of a major city police chief. But Detroit's in need of stability. And I think the cops will tell you that.
Detroit Police Chief James Craig marking 1 year at the helm of the Detroit Police Department. Chief, thank you so much for being with us today on Stateside.
And thank you. Appreciate it.